Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language, and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Listen.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat. I'm your host this week for the first time ever, Tom Marks. Hi, everybody.
We all decided to clap. We actually didn't coordinate this. We thought about it in our heads, but we decided to give you a ceremonial clap.
That made sense.
Well, yeah. I appreciate that. This is episode 454 of NVC. Joining me today is Mr. Brendan Graber.
Hey, what's up?
Not a lot, actually.
Really?
It's just, you know, just
hanging
out.
For me.
Also joining us is Seth Macy.
Hello.
The lone representative of IGN's main office. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
True.
Which is just your living room.
It's my home office.
And, of course, Mr. Brian Altano.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me. It's good to be here. Thanks a lot. How are you? How have you been?
I've been good. It's been warm, but I'm ready. I'm ready. I'm excited to be back in the hosting chair after years of not hosting podcasts.
I agree. It's good to have you here.
I'm excited to see you host.
Aw. Well, now there's too much pressure. Let's dial it back. Dial it back a little bit.
Meh.
You might suck.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
It could go bad.
It could go really bad.
You never know. I mean, it might, right?
Keep watching to find out. This week, we are talking about SteamWorld Quest, which has finally come out. We put out a review that I wrote earlier this week. We'll also be talking about Super Smash Bros. Ultimate's update. Specifically, I wanted to dig into the level editor a little bit because we talked a little bit about Joker. We knew a little bit more about that. But last week when we were on the show, we didn't really have a chance to actually use the level editor.
Right.
And we're going to talk about Joker a little bit too, but mostly there's some weird things coming out of that level letter, guys. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then we'll also talk about Mortal Kombat 11 on Switch, because there's been mixed reports about that. But we've got lots more to talk about. We're going to take your questions as well, so stick around. But first, let's start with SteamWorld Quest. It's a good game.
Mm-hmm.
I reviewed it. See, this is usually the part where I'm so used to somebody being like, Tom reviewed that game. What did you give it, Tom?
And
I
can queue you up if you want.
Yeah, please.
Tom, you've been playing SteamWorld Quest. You even reviewed it for us here at IGN, which you can check out at ign.com/SteamWorldQuest/review. Not a real URL. What did you think of the game?
I liked it. I gave it an 8.6.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and you guys have all been playing it a bit too, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so, like, for sort of transparency here, SteamWorld Quest, the new game from Image Inform, who've done many SteamWorld games in the past, the SteamWorld cinematic universe, if you will. SteamWorld Dig 1 and 2 are two of my favorite modern Metroidvania games. I would say two of the best games in the entire genre. And then there's also I'm always forgetting
Heist. Heist.
SteamWorld Heist, which is a lot more strategy-driven.
Yeah, it's like 2D XCOM, pretty much.
And so they've effectively built this universe with this art style, which they've now applied to different genres, and this is their take on the card PG.
That's a good way of putting it. And
I'm
going to
let you do the rest from here.
There's the oft-forgotten SteamWorld Tower Defense.
I did not remember that because it is oft-forgotten.
That was a game that came out in, I think it was 2010 for the DSi back then.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do not remember that at all.
That was their first game. That was also the first SteamWorld game, and then they had one iOS game between that and Dig, and then when they did Dig is kind of when it popped off, and since Dig, they've only done SteamWorld games.
Right. Wow.
What have you guys... So I liked it a lot. Obviously, you can read my review on IGN.com to see kind of why I liked it. I think it brings a lot of choice is kind of one of the main reasons. But what about you guys? How have you been digging it?
I've been digging it.
I see what you did there.
I played it on the flight here, and I didn't really know what to expect because I actually never played a SteamWorld game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. It's my horrible confession.
Thankfully, you don't have to?
No, not at all.
They're all linked, but it's sort of just for funsies linked.
Right.
You don't need to have played all of them to get into this one or anything like that.
No, it's a ton of fun, and I'm like kind of looking forward to my flight next time because I have all this free time to play it. The best thing was about, I don't know, 15 minutes into the tutorial when it told you how to run. that made me like really like the game.
Isn't it crazy how much just move speed changes like your impression of a game sometimes?
Yeah.
I was playing this game on Steam called Superland a couple weeks ago, and you get to an ability that doubles your movement speed about 10 minutes into the game. And before that, I was like, this game is bad. And then I got the ability, and I was like, this game is okay.
Yep.
It was just like instantly different.
I'm trying to sort of wrap my head around how to explain this game to the audience for the sort of uninitiated of kind of what other games it reminds me of. Because I think it has like a little bit of Paper Mario to it. It's got a little bit of sort of Child of Light as well. But then the card system makes it sort of different than those games.
A little bit Slay the Spire too.
Yeah. And so basically you build this party out and you move through these sort of linear environments that are gridded out by the very system, very like sort of simple map. And you fight enemies and you queue up cards and using combinations you take them down and move on. And there's like optional areas that you can skip, but you can also replay entire chapters or stages at the same time too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so from there, the depth goes into sort of what moves you want to use, what party members you want to use, all that fun stuff.
This is something that kind of surprised me about it, was that it is a pretty thin RPG in the overall sense, right?
Yeah.
It's not a complex game. It's really the combat and the building your decks and choosing your moves and what order do you play cards and how do you build your party. You obviously haven't gotten to the party part of it yet, but all of that stuff is really where the depth of that game comes from. And everything else after that, around that, and out of that is just a little sort of surface level, if you will. Not bad by any means, just like not something like a Final Fantasy where you're exploring these vast worlds and you're getting all of these items. You get some items, but it's like you get one weapon and two equipables, and it's all very, very simple, which I think is intentional.
Yeah.
But, at the risk of outing myself for my taste, you can pick apart. I don't usually go for card battle games, nor most like JRPG style, like party, choose your party and have to pick your powers. Like, I don't like a game where like I get like five party members, I can only use three,
and I never see those guys again. Like, okay,
I'm actually with you.
So yeah. Because this is very thin and it simplifies a lot of things, I actually had a lot more fun than I thought I would.
Me too.
Oh, interesting.
Because every character has 8 cards they bring to the table for your entire deck, and they get recycled pretty fast. So you don't have to go like, okay, well, which 500 cards do I have to pick through? Like, no, I just picked out 8 ones for per character that I think synergize the best, and I can swap on the fly. I'm like, okay, I like this. I like being able to say, this isn't working. I need to go back and change. Let's give this guy a better special attack versus this character needs more building up special meter. I think that actually worked out really well for me, and I really ended up enjoying myself.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for a novel battle system. That's why I gave Octopath Traveler a 9.3 when I reviewed it, because I love that game, because it has like this crazy novel like twist on the battle system, and I kind of feel that same satisfaction in playing this when I'm like, oh well, if I play this card then I won't get the combo. Mm-hmm. So do I want to hit him with hit him with this or hit him with that? And then it shakes things up, and there's always that the bit of randomness to it as well, just from having it it's a deck building game,
right?
That with graphics, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think the entire notion of a sort of streamlined take on the traditional RPG genre is something that's very sort of understated and underappreciated in the video game industry, because they are historically these massive 90-hour things, and these epic quests and this huge saga and all this stuff like that. And then I find myself over time gravitating towards my favorite RPG of the last few years is Stick of Truth, the South Park game, because that is the 10.5-hour RPG, and to me it gives me all of the sort of highs and lows of a Final Fantasy game in a very truncated, condensed form. And I felt like the combat was just as fun, and so I sort of got tinglings of that with this game, where I was sort of this is a large RPG sort of squashed down to something consumable. And something that where I don't feel like I am spending hours and hours meandering, and I can sort of focus on the great parts of this game.
The last RPG I played was Persona 5, and it took me 120 hours.
This is what I'm talking about.
This one took me 17, and I was like, great.
Yeah.
And I probably could have played it for another 20 and been really happy with it. I wasn't bored of it, but I do agree. I think this is a nice length. It's a cool-sized game in this day and age for an RPG.
Yeah.
A question I wanted to put to you guys is, and one of the things that I saw a lot in the comments of the review, and also people responding to me on Twitter when I tweeted about the review and all that jazz, was, are you fans of card games generally? And, do you think you need to be a card game fan or a fan of something like Slay the Spire in order to enjoy a game like this?
No.
No, I don't think so.
As I said, I wasn't. So I was kind of preparing for the worst.
Right.
I really liked Phantasy Star Online 1 and 2. And then when they came out with 3 and it was a card battle, no, this is terrible. Get out of here. They did it with Pokemon trading card battle. I never got into that either.
I hated Chain of Memories for a similar reason, and I love card games.
Yeah, I didn't like the prospect, but I think the way that this is so streamlined and it's quick, you aren't going okay, let's look at my hand for a while. Which one do I want? Should I discard? It's just bam, bam, bam. You're chaining together spells. You're swapping things on the fly if you don't like them anymore. They give you lots of abilities that just kind of rack up damage, so you don't feel like you're just doing nothing for 5 turns.
Mm-hmm.
I love the chain abilities, where if you play 3 cards from one character, they have an added bonus that goes out. And it kind of allows you to experiment and also kind of change how your character behaves. You don't have to have a mage and a tank and a healer. You can have someone who deals damage and their chain shields everybody up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I don't have to waste time going okay, better raise my attack power for one whole turn and do nothing. I like the speed of this game.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got a nice clip.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys aren't intimidated by something like the deck building? Because I know that the deck building screen is, and this is not a dig against this game, I'm going to use that joke as many times as I can. But the deck
building screen, until it runs out of steam?
It looks a lot like Hearthstone. It's modeled kind of after that UI a little bit. I think quite intentionally, because it's good UI in general. But that part wasn't intimidating to you either. I appreciate you already mentioned the fact that it's only 8 cards is really helps with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, get a lot of cards after a while, and so eventually you're kind of I only have 8 to choose from. Just do 1 and 1 and 1, and you want to go, oh, what about that one? I just got that one. So it can be kind of nerve-wracking to just get a new card and go, well, do I have room for it in my deck? Should I experiment for a while? But I think you get used to it and you learn like with which what synergizes with your current loadout and what doesn't. You can just save it for another day. And we're like, okay,
right,
this isn't working. Let me go back to the drawing board.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk a little bit about the SteamWorld games as a whole too, because we mentioned them earlier. Really quick, Image and Form has just proven that they can make a good game,
yeah,
right? They've made 6 games. This is their 6th, and every one of them has received at least an 8.0 from IGN. Except for the iOS game Ant Hill, which we didn't review, but has like over 4 stars on the iOS store. It's a very, very popular game. They've just basically every time, like even if you're not a huge fan of it, they make good quality games.
Yeah.
So my question is, where do they go from here? Where does the SteamWorld series go from here? So this is wild speculation territory. And it's always rude. I know if the Image and Form guys are listening, it's always like, all right, you did this one. What's next? Come on.
I know,
but
right?
But these guys, like, they release a new game every 2 years. They work at a fast clip.
They're very prolific, and they have incredible quality standards as well, which is really cool to see. I'm going to be that, like, idiot guy who's just like, make the thing that I like the most. Which I know, like, as artists, which they have a studio, you know, composed of people like that, they probably made Quest because they're like, we've done 2 dig games in a row, let's do something kind of new for us, let's, like, you know, flex some different muscles and try out some new things. And I'm like, that's great, it's very good, I really enjoyed it, thanks a lot, make SteamWorld Dig 3. No, and like, I hate to say that, because like, they are probably like, this is our chance to spread our wings and to make all these different genres. And I'm like, I know, and you should, but you're amazing.
Keep digging,
amazing,
please.
Yeah, keep digging. Yeah, I think that like SteamWorld Quest is like a very good game, and I think that SteamWorld Dig 2 is an amazing game. Mm. Like, I think it's like one of my favorite games on Switch. It's one of my favorite games of this generation. Like, it's just a phenomenal game, and so I want more like that. I'm more of like a action platforming Metroidvania guy than I am. Like, the best card RPG in the world is always going to be second place to like me playing a game where I can explore tunnels for hours on end,
right,
find secrets and fight bosses.
And that's fair enough. Mm-hmm. That's
SteamWorld
taste.
Tunnel.
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh.
I just like the entire loop of going down there and digging and bringing treasures up and selling them and upgrading my stuff and going deeper and digging. And like, it's such a fun take. Also, making a Metroidvania game that like you can sort of carve your own path through, instead of having to play something that's been pre-designed, is like, I think, really cool. Anyway, it's a great game. You guys should check it out. But make whatever you want.
2 things come out to me. One is that I would love to see Nintendo take their whole recent licensing
Ooh.
Deal further and give them an actual like first-party property to tinker around with.
Like Metroid?
Metroid Cross, SteamWorld, Universe, mm-hmm. Collide.
Ooh.
Plus Rabbids,
like, even like
Kingdom Battle.
Pikmin?
See, honestly, you say that. I just want Image and Form to make the next Paper Mario game.
Mm.
Oh, that'd be good too.
Right?
Okay, I'm in. I'm into that.
I also like how every game they've done besides 1 and 2 for SteamWorld Dig has been like a weird cross combination. They have mm-hmm. Wild West digging Metroidvania. They have Space Pirate XCOM 2D style. And now they have fantasy adventure card battle JRPG. So I want the next one to be another crazy mix that sounds insane but will actually work. So
SteamWorld Cowboy Samus with a shovel.
Sure.
But with a better name.
SteamWorld Pirate Attorney Investigations.
There we go. There we go.
I'm into it.
Seth, any guesses? Any wild speculation?
Where they go from here?
Yeah. What genre, theme, anything?
Oh, man. Battle Royale.
2D Battle Royale.
I think we can end on that.
Perfect.
Actually, real quick, I do want to say, so the SteamWorld Quest, when this comes out, will have come out today.
Mm-hmm.
They've asked us not to spoil the intro. It's not like a huge thing, but there is a mention in it of pirates, like as just an offhanded, like, someone's asking to hear a story, and they're like, you want to hear another pirate story? And he's like, no, I want to hear one about dragons, and like, I think they might be teasing a pirate game.
Pirate Attorney Investigations.
Maybe
it's
I'm
gonna
way
happen.
Off base with that, but I think I might
like
be teasing.
Pirate objection.
About like high seas robots.
Digging and
digging the water.
Treasures, like a Metroidvania pirate.
SteamWorld Scuba.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so one thing we have learned today is that we're all very bad at coming up with video games.
Yes.
Yeah. That's okay. That's okay. We're good at other things sometimes as well.
Sometimes.
Oh,
occasionally.
I dig it. Anyway, let's talk about Mortal Kombat 11. Brendan, you've been playing a lot of Mortal Kombat 11. You've been playing a little bit of it on Switch. We, of course, did review that. Mitchell Saltzman, our fighting game guru in the office, reviewed it. He gave it a 9.0, liked it quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that basically the summary, actually, I think I wrote it down. Let me read it out for you. It's almost like I prepared. He said the verdict, or the end of his review, was Mortal Kombat 11 is the best game in the 27-year-old series thanks to deep, methodical, new mechanics and fun story. So he really did like it. I think the main complaints came with from sort of grindiness of its tower and some of the microtransaction stuff.
Yeah, there's been a lot of pushback against the economy in this game, which is essentially a lot of like grinding for sort of cosmetic items that are effectively palette swaps most of the time, and also like getting weapons that you can't use for long, and then having to use other things, and all of that just feels like something that they're already patching to begin with. But also looking at the Metacritic for like critical reception of this game versus user scores is something like 8 versus 2.4.
Yeah,
like it's getting sort of negative review bomb because of the sort of MTX stuff.
There's a lot of reasons, I think, for some of the review bombing that I've heard of.
I noticed, yeah.
Some are weirder than others.
Some are wildly political about a game where a theater actor and a robot and a woman fight a ghoul, but sure.
And a bug woman.
Yeah. You spend your time on Earth as you will. However you want to. I don't judge. It's fine.
But I guess what I should segue into is that the Switch version, from what I've seen, has its share of problems.
Yeah, and the port, real quick, the port was made by Shiver Entertainment. Shiver is owned by, it's a studio owned by WB Games, as far as I understand it. Mm-hmm. The only other thing that I could find, I scoured the internet trying to see what they had worked on, and the only other thing I could find was Scribblenauts Showdown was their game.
Hmm. Oh, okay.
And which is the most recent Scribblenauts, I believe, and was the first one to kind of leave Nintendo platforms and go to other platforms as well. So they were responsible for that, and then they ported Mortal Kombat 11, is it seems to be the history behind that.
Right.
And please report.
Okay, I'm going to try and contextualize this. The fighting game part of Mortal Kombat on Switch feels fine. The one-on-one battles.
So the actual responsiveness.
The actual responsiveness. Okay. I didn't see a lot of slowdown or anything like that. It felt pretty smooth. The graphics, you know, weren't the best, but they were pretty serviceable.
Which is like, that's like the steak part of the steakhouse, right?
And then like when they go into like the fatalities or the brutal finishers, like you can see like it goes into a cutscene, kind of like a lower resolution a bit. But, you know, for the most part, I was like, okay, this works. This is okay. Then I went to the Crypt, which is like where they randomly made a third-person adventure puzzle loot box simulator, where you wander around an island to
just
spend your hard-earned
game
currency
after
to open chests that may contain fatalities, or maybe they'll contain a little doodad or a combat card for your online profile.
And to really pitch people on this, because it's kind of, I didn't really understand it until you showed it to me.
Mm-hmm.
This is like a full-on new mode where you do not see these characters from the side. You see them from behind, like God of War or Tomb Raider, and they're running around basically this large environment, opening treasure chests and doing puzzles.
Yeah.
Which is odd for
Mortal
the franchise.
Kombat!
When you play this on consoles, like there is a full skybox, and by that I mean like, you know, you can see off into the distance.
You can see like you're in Shang Tsung's island from Mortal Kombat 1. So you see like some familiar locales. There's like the blood pit. There's this big shining moon, a volcano. If you're on Switch, it looks more like God of War 1.
Yeah, or
there is
Turok,
no skybox. There's just fog.
Yeah.
Their resolutions are extremely muddy. Like, the rock caverns look like they're made out of potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
It is astounding, to put briefly. Like, I know this is our first time making a weird third-person adventure in a fighting game, but I'm just kind of flabbergasted if the Switch can run things like Doom and Warframe and make an open-world Breath of the Wild, how this looks this muddy down and so for better words, ugly.
Yeah.
And there's still slowdowns.
It doesn't look good.
It looks like things are about to pop in textures, but they never do.
If I may, does that mean that Mortal Kombat 11 is the current front runner for prettiest game of 2019 and ugliest game of 2019?
Well, yeah. I mean, possibly, because I think that like what the studio has accomplished on Switch in the core game is, with a K, is is incredible. With also with a K. So. And that's like, I think it's sort of like amazing to see this game running on Switch when you're just playing the fighting game parts, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's actually really cool, again, with a K. Mm. But if you jump into the crypt, which is canonically with a K, in the game spelled with a K.
Is it actually?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, of course it is.
No.
So are consumables with a K. characters with a K.
Yeah.
Does treasure chest, is it K-H-E-S-T? Like,
no, they don't do soft.
I will say, though, that in the crypt, you go, there's an area called the courtyard with a C.
What?
I don't get it. I think it was a misspelling. I'm really upset.
It's a typo.
They should patch that.
They really should. They are patching a few things about the crypt for all versions where they're going to make, because there's like, there's three different currencies that you have to obtain to open chests. Those are your uranium coins. Then you also need hearts mm-hmm. for certain heart chests. And you need soul fragments for soul vaults, like green things.
Sure, sure.
And it's just like, okay, there's a little much. And everything in this, most things, I should say. I'm trying to do the wiki for this place. It's giving me nightmares. Most chests you find are randomized in there and what they have in them. To the effect that if I find a chest with a brutality and a fatality in the palace entrance, you may open that same chest and find something completely different. Wait, you may find your chest with the brutality and fatality off in the dungeon somewhere.
You're going to have to explain this to me and others. How do you find a fatality in a treasure chest?
It gives you a little business card with, like, do this move.
Oh, and it teaches you an actual...
No, you open the box and someone just jumps out and rips your spine out.
There actually are little jump scares like that, so be warned. Yeah, someone just...
Wait, so are these moves that your character with a K can't do until you open up these chests?
They are,
and get the business
the
card
button
with a K?
Inputs are not shown to you. You can actually do them. We have a wonderful list at IGN Wikis for Mortal Kombat 11 with every fatality list that you can do. But when you look at the move list on in your game menu, you won't actually see the button inputs until you unlock the secondary fatality or the brutality.
So it's not just like your character doesn't have to learn these things.
No.
Like they're online. We have them.
Wait, mm-hmm. wait. So that means that you could open a box and get a tangible thing like a skin or an item, or you could open a box and get instructions that you could have looked up online.
Yes.
Yeah. That's lame.
It kind of is.
Be sure to
But
drink
people
your
love those fatalities. But then I guess they're going to hopefully soon patch, you know, how you get the currency for these chests.
Right.
And maybe clarify better. I think some chests are static and some chests are not, which is very confusing because you just don't know what you're going to get. And, like, it would be nice to be able to say, like, oh, I have coins. If I open these chests, I'll probably get a skin. Hmm. Whereas these chests, I'll probably get this thing. It doesn't tell you that. And it's kind of annoying trying to figure out, like, nobody wants, like, a little, like, combat icon with, like, Johnny Cage's face to put on your internet profile. Like, do people really want
speak
that
for yourself?
When I'm looking for, like, a brutality or a skin or something like that? Like, I don't know.
One more question I had about this is that there's a lot of talk about a lot of the modes being sort of tethered to forced online connection stuff.
Yeah, because...
How does that work on Switch? Like, if I play this game on, like, a flight... Like,
you will not be able to access the Crypt or the Towers of Time, which is, like, their... randomly changing online towers that give you different rewards and are
okay, but you can still just have like a battle, like a fighting.
Yeah, you can still do the main story mode, mm-hmm. The classic crypt tower, classic towers, and then like you know local battles and whatever. But there are certain areas you can only access when you're online because of those chests that you open. They don't want you to basically like reload an old save file or mess with it and go like, oh, I didn't actually open it. It's all server-side.
Wow.
So when you open up a chest or you finish a battle in the Towers of Time, it pings the server to go, okay, this is your rewards. You are now locked into that.
Sweet. My question is, did the Nintendo version replace the blood with sweat?
No.
Okay.
It'd be nice for a paintball mode.
You know, it would be kind of cool if they would like throw that in as a little Easter egg. Like, yeah. You could turn on sweat mode.
The thing is, like, this game is so much more violent than just the blood. So it would be really
weird
if there's just only sweat, like
Somebody rips out somebody's spine and just sweat comes out. It's like, all right, that's odd.
I know you haven't spent the bulk of your time with the Switch version, mm-hmm. but I think the be-all, end-all question is, do you think that this game is... Would you recommend it on Switch in its current state? There was some talk on the NBC forums about maybe you should wait till some stuff gets changed or mm-hmm. patched out. And
yeah, like, I don't know how much patching is going to solve some of the Switch issues, like the crypt. Like, I don't know if you could patch to make it better. Mm. If you had the option between, say, any other console and Switch, mm-hmm. I'd probably recommend getting the other consoles. That said, functionally, the game works on Switch.
Yeah.
And the fact that it works in a handheld mode is incredible. Yeah. I mean, I can't not say that. Like, it's pretty crazy that you can play these battles on a handheld device and they still look serviceable. It's just that you're going to have a serious lack of quality look to the crypt section.
Speaking of a serious lack of quality,
With a K.
Let's talk about some of the new levels that have been flooding into Super Smash Bros. Ultimate.
Right.
That's a nice segue, right?
Yeah.
I'm rusty with segues.
No, it's a very strange sort of quality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So for those of you who don't know, we talked about it last week as because it was just revealed, but Super Smash Bros. Ultimate did get a level editor last week, which hooks into the phone app, the Nintendo app or whatever, so you can look through levels on your phone. You can also look through shared levels on the Switch itself, and you can make levels and share them. And hey, guess what? People are taking advantage of that.
Yeah. Hey, you guys remember why Swapnote shut down and why the Miiverse is dead? Because people were being real idiots.
I've said this for years now, but I truly believe that humans as a species, when given the option to create, make two things, and it's either World 1-1 from Super Mario or the human penis. That's really where it goes every time, and that's what happened here.
Those cave drawings in France. It's actually World 1-1,
and then the other thing.
Yeah.
So as you just made abundantly clear, a lot of fallacies have shown up.
Yeah.
That said, that was kind of the first few days. I've been checking it occasionally on my phone and on my Switch, just kind of looking through some of the shared levels, and you don't really see that much immediately explicit mm-mm. stuff anymore, because there is a report button. You can easily report stuff, and I assume Nintendo is taking action and banning people that are just sort of trolling. There is just a lot of weird stuff on there. Like, there's one of the most, you get yas, right? If you want to yas something, it means you like it. And then it goes to the top of the stage list. The most yad thing is a stage that's just a box with the DVD logo bouncing around the screen.
You know my favorite
that
part
is
about
the most liked custom stage on the Super Smash.
You
that
know why
amazing.
It's the most liked? The best part about that level is that eventually the logo hits the corner exactly.
Oh yeah. Baby!
They knew what they were doing.
That's really good. I actually haven't checked in on that app in a while.
Yeah, one of the other ones is Kirby. It's Kirby has a gun with a question mark.
I'm like Kirby has a knife.
There's Kirby with a knife, too. There's a lot of inappropriate Waluigis, which I know a man after your own heart.
I'm a fan.
Yeah,
it's
I'm looking at it right now. There's a Pokeball stage. There's a Squidward stage. But then, like you said, people are weird.
Yeah.
We just get inside the minds of weird children.
Mm-hmm. Is that a Katamari?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's a lot of,
just called June's Food Court. And it's just like it's just like a restaurant from a mall food court. And then there's Do the Mario, which is like this weird like quadruple-chinned Mario.
Just a lot of
weird
stuff.
I thought there was a good one of
a Phoenix Wright one where he's just pointing. Like, there's a lot of great stuff here.
There is. There was one I saw with Ganondorf, and it's just like he's in the background, and the foreground is his arm and this giant sword, and he just hyahs it in circles, and there's flames on one edge. So you're just fighting on a rotating flaming stage with this giant sword.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of that, too. There's a lot of people recreating Tetris, but blocks are falling that are just on fire.
Yeah.
And things
I think what is, like, sort of inherently driving a lot of the sort of humor here, or the nuance or lack thereof, is that this is essentially MS Paint that you can fight on.
Yeah.
Like the way these levels look and the way they animate and the way they're very crude, and the texture work is very crude, and people are making amazing things.
Yeah.
Like not to just only sort of highlight
the phalluses. Weird sentence. But people are making amazing things. Like, there are, like, fully animated stages. There are things that are, like, incredible drawings.
Someone's remade the intro to 64 with the little desk.
Oh, yeah, wow.
They remade that stage.
Yeah, somebody made... That's, like, one of the more popular ones, too, is, like, the desk stage from 64 is there, or that entire intro is there. People are doing really cool stuff, and that's what I love. The game design inherently... or at least historically, was based on limitations and then fighting through those limitations to make beautiful art. You know, that's like, it's the reason Mario has a mustache, is because when he just had a nose and they tried to put a mouth there, it didn't read, so they give him a mustache and he just has one forever.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. That's really cool. That said, like, people are jumping into this. They're making really crude things. They're clicking a button and they're uploading it, and we all have to look at them on our phones.
Yeah.
And that's really funny, too.
The thing that is tricky to me is that I wish that there was a way to say, this is a funny level, and then this is a actually good level to fight on.
Yeah.
I wish there was a distinction between those two, because the top list is, it's hard to find custom stages where if you're like, I want to shake up my roster of, like, what we're playing on, because 115 or whatever isn't enough.
Just not enough.
I wish that there was a little bit of a distinction between, like, man, this is a really funny stage, and hey, this is actually, like, someone put a lot of time into this.
Yeah. You're totally right. There's no categories right now, especially when you look through the app. There's basically, it's just chaos.
Yeah.
It's all just, like, stuff that looks like it would be a great stage, and then stuff that isn't.
There's also, sorry. There are some stages that aren't really meant to be stages so much as, like, displays.
Yeah.
Like, some really cool ones I've seen where people will take videos of them doing amazing combos while teleporting through different parts of the stage. And it looks like a Dragon Ball Z fight. Like, he smashes him into there. He goes into a portal. He jumps into a portal, too. He comes out on the top, and he hits him downward into another portal and then reappears somewhere else to hit him. And it's like this crazy, like, Rube Goldberg combo machine. And it looks amazing, but it's not practical. It's just cool for that one thing.
Yeah.
Well, it reminds me of, like, a lot of the stuff that was, like, spinning out of Mario Maker, where people were making, like, these horrible death traps that weren't necessarily fun to play, but if you got the rhythm of them down, it made an amazing video.
Yeah.
But, like, if you sat down to play the level itself, you'd be like, oh, this is not fun.
Right.
But the creator sits down to play it, and he's like, well, here's how you hit every note. And it's like, oh, that's kind of cool. I saw a lot of people are doing a lot of, like, Ring of Fire levels, which causes super damage and also bounces you around like crazy. So these two characters will start on, like, a tiny ledge and then just kind of ping pong around for 14 minutes until one of them explodes, which is great. I love that.
I'm all for that.
There's also a quick shout out. I want to say there's a new or a thing that's coming back, actually. I think it was it Brawl that had the stage editor, or just the Wii U version?
It was Brawl.
Yeah.
No,
the Wii version.
Whichever the last stage editor, a thing came up called Smash Get Ball that a couple people are into, which is you build these stages that have basically hoops with warps in them and you try to, like, get into the who. It's a pretty cool thing, so look up Smash Get Ball, because you can find some cool stages for that as well.
Sweet.
That does bring a good point, is that the search function I do like.
Yeah.
It could be better, but I do like how they have, you can just search by name. If someone says, oh, I made a cool stage for this, or if you just want to find stages with, like, SpongeBob, there you go.
There are a lot.
There are a lot.
There are a lot of SpongeBob stages for some reason, which I'm all for.
Yeah, I tweeted out four the other day. One was called Mario Pissing, which is
apparently
based on, like, a popular meme video.
Yep.
It's terrifying because it looks like he's wearing, like, a glove and he has no shorts on. Another one is Scorcher, which is one of the aforementioned shapes we described earlier. This one's shooting something bad. Then there's Abe Lincoln Dies, which is, like, basically him at... I think he's going to see Castlevania the movie. And then there's Potatoes, which is just a big chef and a giant bowl of potatoes, which looks like a pot of gold under a rainbow.
I love it.
And so all of that's really just shows sort of the, you know,
just the who knows.
Yeah, just whatever you could get.
I really like the animated feature that they had for this, like, to have staged objects move around.
Yeah.
Like, it just adds so much more flavor than the original stage builder had.
Mm-hmm.
And I do want to see the really cool creations that come out, just not so much of the creepy ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of what's driving all this craziness is that it's a nice suite of features, right?
Yep.
It's a pretty good stage builder, and it's cool to see that. Let's move on to some news, because there is a lot of news, and I want to get through some of it. The first thing I want to start with is a Bloomberg report that came out.
So exciting.
I think just yesterday.
Yeah.
Part of that report was news that broke earlier in the week, end of last week, from I think it was Fortune, which is that Nintendo is working with Tencent, actually, to start selling Switches in China.
Which is tremendously gigantic.
Yeah, that's a huge deal. Well, why is it a huge deal?
Well, I mean, it's like the largest growing economy in the world. Mm-hmm. And I believe Nintendo's been trying to get back into China for like years and years and years. And it just was never happening. And now, like, I mean, like, not only is this economically going to be huge for Nintendo, like, this is politically huge for Nintendo as well. Right.
If you look at their history of sort of trying to delve in this market, it's been really interesting. They specifically made that thing called the IQ. Do you guys know about that?
Yes.
Yeah, it's basically a round N64 controller that had ROMs loaded into it to sell a sort of plug-and-play system to the Chinese market in lieu of the fact that piracy is so rampant there and that selling a traditional console basically meant that they would just, like, get cut out of all the game sales. And so this thing circumvented that by
and it was licensed to a Chinese company.
Yeah. Yeah. And it had stuff like Mario 64 on it and a couple of other games.
Right. We talked about that on the show like a year or two.
Yeah. It's a super interesting sort of relic. And you maybe can dig one up on eBay or something like that. Yeah. But it's a tough market to crack into because they sort of have much more lax approach to purchasing things legally, for lack of a better term.
And it's important to note, I think their stock rose like 13% made this announcement. But it's important to note, this hasn't happened yet. This has not been approved yet. It's still going through regulation stuff. Apparently, according to the Bloomberg Report, industry analysts expect it to go through and start being sold in China by the end of the year. Mm. But that's not 100% yet, so we'll still have to see if it maybe gets caught up in something or just goes through.
Isn't it wild to think that they don't sell the thing that's made in the country it's made in in the country?
When you put it like that, yeah. the other part of this Bloomberg report that's kind of the bigger immediate news is kind of further sources talking about the new models of Switch that might be coming. And I'm just going to read this quote out from Bloomberg. You should go to their site and check out the whole story. But they say, growth in the current period will get a boost from the launch of a new, cheaper version of the Switch, according to two people familiar with the matter who requested anonymity to discuss private plans, which is stuff we've been hearing already. Right. Yeah. Like, we've heard that rumor already.
We're hearing it a lot.
Yes.
To the point where it's like kind of you can't ignore it anymore.
Yeah. And the new bit of the nugget of new info here is the new device will likely be launched by the end of June, according to one of the
crazy
people. Yep. Like 2 months away.
I thought I misheard. I was like, when we were talking about it this morning, I was like, they must mean it's going to be announced officially in June.
Yeah.
So it's going to airdrop into the E3 Coliseum.
By the end of June could mean an E3 announcement with a release within a couple weeks. Yep. It could mean it comes out at E3. We don't really know.
By the time this show goes out, Nintendo is going to have its fiscal earnings call, which is whatever our time. So they might just be like, by the way, good news, stockholders, we're making a new Switch.
Yeah, I mean, I could see why they would sort of downplay an announcement like that in the meantime, because it's sort of sacrificial to anybody on the fence for buying a Switch right now. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And that's always the sort of ebb and flow of the games industry and launching mid-generation revisions and such, because you put yourself at a risk of saying, we could get $300 out of somebody today.
Yeah.
Right.
Or we could have these rumors permeate where somebody goes, I'm going to wait until June. I'm going to wait until July. I'm going to wait until August. I'm going to wait until Christmas till a price drop. And ultimately, video games are a business and Nintendo wants to sell Switches.
So. What's kind of crazy is that the Nintendo Switch is still, if you go to the best selling video game stuff, the non-discounted vanilla Nintendo Switch is the top selling video game console. Period.
Yeah.
No reduction in price. At $300, people are still like, yes, give it to me.
You mean currently?
Currently, right now. So it's not even if there's a cheaper one, it's going to sell even more.
Right.
Million, billion.
And again, these are just sources from people who know and they're not confirmed. But Brian said, it's gotten a lot of sources.
Yeah.
A lot of different sources from a lot of different places and a lot of different people.
It's starting to feel more and more like it's going to be a thing. And I think one of the things we keep hearing is that there's that sort of split rumor of there's two new SKUs, and one of them is the sort of simplified Switch Mini or whatever, Switch Lite.
Switch and then, 2DS.
Yeah.
I swear, exactly. If they call it the new Nintendo Switch, I will destroy something.
Get ready to destroy something. That seems on brand for them. I imagine it's going to be, the branding will be confusing.
Yep.
They are a whimsical toy company that is also hell-bent on driving GameStop employees insane.
So, if I may, the end of that Bloomberg paragraph actually goes on to say, the existing Switch will receive a modest upgrade this year, though a more powerful version is not in the works, the people said, their sources said. So we talked previously on NVC about this idea that, you know, what if they do a new 3DS version of the Switch and then it splits of like, oh, it's got more powerful hardware, so some games can't take advantage of it and others do, and how do you communicate that? This report is essentially saying that's not the case.
Yeah.
They're going to be doing this cheaper Switch, whatever it is, and then just the normal Switch, but with maybe some sort of little upgrade here.
Now
with
64 gigabytes of internal storage.
Like, it could be something as simple as that. Yeah. Right? Maybe we should change our expectations from being these two different bridges.
I was just joking around, but that's entirely possible. Like, now with 256 gigabytes, because
it could be
the price
as
that,
yeah,
has come down enormously.
Do you mean like internal memory?
Yeah, internal memory, or like, yeah.
Because an SD card, I mean, SD cards, 400 gig SD cards are dropped down at $65.
Yep.
There, which is crazy because they were three or four times that when the Switch first launched.
Yep.
And I remember being like, should I get one of these? And I'm glad I waited. I, you know, moved stuff around in the fridge, as they say, on my card for a while. But yeah, I think that like bundling a game digitally, adding in a bigger memory card, maybe even throwing something cool like a Joy-Con with a D-pad on it, something like that that isn't a entire relaunch of the system that doesn't necessarily make early adopters feel like a sting for not being there.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I think a mini Switch is far more interesting to me because I think that like if it doesn't communicate with your television or if it doesn't have Joy-Cons and that pop off and stuff like that, that inherently goes against the ideology of the console handheld hybrid and also the literal name of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
The Nintendo Stay.
Yeah. Right. Like,
I really truly believe that there will be a smaller, more rugged Switch. You'll still be able to play it on TV. It'll be aimed sort of like the 2DS was to kids, and they're going to throw Pokemon in there because there's going to be a lot of people buying Switch for the first time for their kids. And who wants to spend $300 if you have two kids like I do on two different Switches so the kids can have their Shield and their Sword?
It's interesting you say.
That's true.
It's interesting you say Pokemon. A question from the Facebook NVC forum group. Stephen Alfieri asks, do you think the pocket version of the Switch or whatever it's going to be will coincide with an Animal Crossing launch on Switch?
And so the pocket version will have Animal Crossing Pocket.
that's the theory, right? Or that's come up a couple times, and we have no sources or any reason to think this beyond speculation. But like the idea that they would bundle it with a Pokemon or an Animal Crossing seems. Like, it just makes sense.
It's like hard to understate how large that fan base of Animal Crossing transcends the traditional core gamer metric.
Mm.
Like the amount of people, even with the new 3DS and the swappable faceplates and all that kind of stuff, that is a gigantic system selling franchise. And I think a lot of like core gamers, hardcore gamers, they're just like, they kind of look at it and they're like, oh, it's not really for me. I don't really get it, which is fine. You're missing out on one of the best video game franchises of all time and building a house and getting your own bed and such and making friends with the animals in town.
Paying a lava lamp.
Yeah.
Getting extorted.
It's a great debt simulator.
Chopping down the trees. Going to people's town and trading coconuts is a blast.
Stung by bees.
Getting stung by bees is a really good thing.
Picking chickens out of your town because they don't belong there.
Games are great, you guys. You're really
falling in holes.
I get it. There's no guns. Yet, but it's a great franchise.
Yeah. They added one to Kirby. Who knows?
But no, this is one of those like big, and Pokemon steals all the thunder, right? Because there's like toys and there's movies and all this other stuff. But Animal Crossing is a tremendously large franchise.
Mm.
And it transcends core gamers. And I think it's a system seller. And I think pairing that with a Switch Mini or something that's sort of just like, here's how you can play the new Animal Crossing game without spending $300 is huge.
Yeah.
And I don't think you necessarily need to have the Joy-Cons pop on and off for that. Like,
right.
Yeah.
We there's not a huge amount of other news. I wanted to run through some smaller things. Starlink Battle for Atlas is getting its new Star Fox DLC on April 30th. That finally got a release date. It'll be $12. It's going to add Slippy, Peppy, and Falco as playable
that
characters.
Poor game. That's a great game. It's always on sale. I highly recommend everyone pick it up.
Yeah, you
can get the physical version for that game for
$25.
Yeah, sometimes even less.
It's because they're 19 not making the other
with day. R wings and everything.
You could get a new Switch with an accessory and the Starlink Battle. Star Fox starter set for $309 2 days ago.
God, wow.
So $9, basically, you got this like really super fun game with an incredible little collectible.
Yeah, so if that DLC sounds expensive, that DLC digitally is probably more money than physically the game will be if you check those places.
Yeah.
So like buying them all at the same time is a great deal and probably the closest you're going to get to getting a really, truly awesome Star Fox game for a while.
Yeah.
Another thing that's very small, Doraemon Story of Seasons was announced for the West. It's coming this autumn. If you guys don't know, Story of Seasons is what Harvest Moon became.
So there
There have been two Story of Seasons games.
I think I reviewed one of those for 3DS.
I think there was just Story of Seasons and then I think Trio of Towns.
That's the one. Yeah. That was a very charming little game.
Yeah, and they were both like in the sevens range.
Yep,
right?
I think
like
I gave it a 7.5. It's just a fun
They're good little
way to play.
It's what Harvest Moon has become. Good to know. Doraemon, the blue robot cat anime creature.
Yep.
This is like a licensed version of Harvest Moon, pretty much, which is kind of weird and cool. And it's cool that it's coming to the West.
So it's like a farm run by a robot cat?
Yep. You play as the kid.
Just like
I think
back in old times.
Just,
it's like the good old days.
Another thing that's real small, not in games, but hey, first Detective Pikachu. People saw Detective Pikachu. They did a premiere, and people seem to be liking it. We're not going to talk about spoilers or anything. But
will
it's
this
like,
be the best video game movie?
That's what some people are saying. Is like,
no way,
like
really?
A pretty good video game movie. Yeah, like it sounds like it's getting well received, which is just nice and exciting. Just wanted to touch on that. And finally, some lighter news. Duck Hunt turned 35 last Sunday, which is really, really cool.
Shouldn't that dog be dead by now?
I mean, he lives on forever
many
in
times
Smash.
Over.
Yeah, yeah. Also, as Seth alluded to earlier, there's a Nintendo fiscal year end of the year call tonight after we're recording this on Wednesday. So that was on Wednesday night. And then also, whatever P5S, Persona 5S is getting revealed Thursday morning, so right before the podcast goes up.
Right.
But good news, we're actually going to cut right now to me and you guys aren't stay here, but we're gonna do me and Casey are gonna do a little pickup and talk about what gets announced because now that we know Nintendo's gonna scoop us, we can prep for it actually prepare. So we're gonna be right back to talk about those things and then we'll be back in the past. So don't go. Hello, everybody. Tom and Zach from the future here, back from the past. Tom, not Casey. I lied. I forgot to mention earlier in the show, Casey's just really busy with stuff, so I was taking over for hosting, and again is really busy with stuff, so Zach is taking over for the pickup we're doing. We don't usually do these because we always get scooped on something.
I think
there's
moving forward,
more news.
I don't know why we haven't considered this before, but I think we should always hold 5 minutes the morning after we record for Nintendo news because it always seems to be the case that we miss something huge. You joked about it yesterday in the episode, but yeah, we missed a couple of things that we wanted to talk about. So go ahead.
Well, yesterday too, I was like, they're not going to scoop us this time. And then there was like stuff we weren't expecting that came out anyway.
Hubris,
so,
my dude.
Let's get into that because we don't have much time and I want to just dig into it. The first thing that came out literally 5 minutes after we hit the record button on the show was Super Mario Maker 2 got a release date. It's June 28th.
Correct.
That's exciting. It's probably sooner than I was expecting.
I don't know. They've been talking about summer for their release. Mm-hmm. So they always tend to release something around E3. You know, 2017, it was Splatoon 2 came out just before or just after E3. I can't remember which. Mm-hmm. But it kind of makes sense to me that they would have something. That means that they'll show a pretty extensive build at E3.
Yeah.
Let people go hands-on. And that I don't think that will be their big showcase piece. But similar to the way that Smash Brothers was their big game last year, and then Pokemon Let's Go was kind of their secondary thing, and had a bunch of kiosks set up on the show floor and stuff. Like, I think there will be some game that will be there as their big thing, and then probably Mario Maker 2 as like their second.
I'm excited to play that.
Me too.
I'm excited that it has a date.
Yeah.
It is a tangible thing now.
Enjoyed the first Mario Maker. Didn't stick with it super long, but I love all of the UGC that comes out of that game and the levels that are like sanctioned by folks and upvoted, and it's really cool to check that kind of stuff out. So.
Yeah. Another thing that came up is Mario Kart Tour has a beta, or is going to have a beta, and it has signups for, if you're in the US or Japan, on an Android phone.
On Android.
Yeah, you can go to MarioKartTour.com and sign up for the beta. The beta actually will run from May 22nd to June 4th, which kind of gives us an indication of maybe it's coming in June.
That'd be cool.
The full game.
Yeah.
We'll have to see, but again, another thing that I'm glad has a date, and or at least we're getting a more tangible sort of feeling of. This stuff came out ahead of Nintendo's year-end earning calls, which there was less news than we were expecting to come out of. The main thing was we heard that the Switch has now surpassed the N64 in total lifetime sales.
Wonderful.
Which is crazy to think about.
That is crazy, yeah.
And the other thing is, anybody who's listening to the show would have just heard me be like, maybe they're going to show that little Switch, like the cheaper Switch at E3. They straight up said, we're not showing hardware at E3.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that they're not showing hardware before or after E3.
Correct.
It just means that They're not going to, that's not going to be the focus of their show. They're not going to be showing that stuff. So if we do get a cheaper Switch or some sort of redesign, it's probably going to be something standalone from that.
Yeah, I mean, the redesign itself is big news, but I'm not even sure that it warrants like a direct, you know right. what I mean? Like to me, that's a press release. Like, hey, congratulations. Now there are two new versions of the Switch. One does this and one does this. If the Switch Pro, as people are kind of referring to it now, is something that is crazy powerful, like much more powerful, which I don't think it will be.
Yeah.
Then maybe I can see a bit more marketing push behind it. But as of right now, it seems to me like they'll probably issue, you know, either a very short like tour video or like a press release, because I don't necessarily think that it's going to be like a big to do.
And so that's something that we talked about too, because the Bloomberg report, one of the sources said that it would be a modest upgrade
right.
or whatever that is. And I yeah. think you're
I think
exactly
it's probably
right.
just a faster chipset and a better battery life. And yeah.
Or we were talking too, Seth was saying, what if it's just like a bigger hard, like a memory card, right?
That'd be cool too. Yeah, just like just an internal simple. Memory. Yeah, that'd be. Yeah.
The final piece of news that's going to break everyone's heart. Persona 5S was officially revealed. Whoa, man. Persona 5S was officially revealed. It's called Persona 5 Scramble, The Phantom Strikers. And it is coming to Switch, but it is not a Persona 5 port.
It is a Musou game.
Yes, it is a standalone game made with Koei Tecmo.
Yeah, in the vein of Hyrule Warriors.
Fire Emblem Warriors.
And Fire Emblem Warriors. So you're getting out there as Joker and Morgana and on and just messing up a bunch of, like, monsters and demons. I don't know. I'm not a Musou guy. There are plenty of people out there that love these games and play them all religiously, and that's great. But I think Tom probably said it best this morning when he said that it would have been less offensive if they would have just come out and said that Persona 5 is not coming to Switch than to have all this buildup and then be like, actually, it's this game that nobody asked for. So
yeah.
I'm being overly harsh, but it is disappointing because I love Persona 5, and I thought that was going to be a game that I could play on the go.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to this game, Persona mm-hmm. 5 Scramble. And a fun little fact, the crossing at Shibuya that is so
yeah.
iconic is called the Shibuya Scramble. And so I think that's maybe where
that's funny. I've only ever heard it referred to as Shibuya Crossing.
I think that's just like a colloquial sort of nickname for it.
Cool.
I'm looking forward to this,
yeah.
but I agree. It's a little disappointing. And furthermore, I think this kind of is the nail in the coffin. I think that we're not going to get Persona 5 on Switch.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
I think if we do, it will be years away, and it will be that they just started going, oh man, people seem to really like that.
I mean,
that.
It was always a long shot because mainstay Persona entries have always been Sony properties.
Yeah.
Like, not necessarily even first party or third party, like, relationship-wise, but it's always been a case of, like, Sony has put money behind those mm-hmm. games, and those have come relatively exclusively to PlayStation platforms.
And as Jonathan said, beyond Joker being in Smash, pretty much all of the, oh, maybe it's going to come to Switch, just came from people being like, I hope it comes to Switch,
exactly.
right? Like, there wasn't some sort of substantiated sources from multiple
people, right.
like the way that we have with the hardware for the Switch.
Right.
So it's disappointing. I think it probably means don't hold your breath for Persona 5 on Switch overall. Which also means that we're going to cut back to past Tom, who's about to disappoint you with something he's about to say. So stick around for the rest of the show. Hey, we're back. Okay, so hopefully Persona 5 just got announced for Switch. We don't actually know yet, but who knows? If it didn't, sorry, I'm breaking all your hearts again. But let's talk about what came out this week, because a couple of things came out that are actually a lot came out this week. Most importantly of any of the releases this week was Ding Dong XL.
Yes, right. Finally.
This is a game that has come up on GameScoop. It has come up in the NVC forums like crazy. Mm. It's a simple one-button game for $1. The IGN logo is a playable character in it.
Collusion. With a K.
It's a very cute little thing. Go check that out. A couple others, Dragon's Dogma Dark Arisen came out on April 23rd for $30. Mortal Kombat 11, obviously, we talked about that, came out on the 23rd, is $60. SteamWorld Quest is coming out the day this podcast airs on the 25th for $25. Picross S3 also comes out on the 25th, which I'm very excited about. That'll be $10. And then the day after, on Friday, Box Boy and Box Girl on April 26th for $10 as
well.
Very
excited for that.
Yeah.
There's a demo for that game out right now if you guys haven't checked it.
Yeah. And another kind of honorable mention of a release, which we're not going to have time to play. I'm sorry we can't talk about it today. But the Mario Odyssey and Breath of the Wild VR updates are also coming out on the 25th.
Yep.
So this the Thursday that this is airing, and we're gonna hopefully be able to play those and tell you about it the next time.
Side note: I built the Labo gun over the weekend.
Okay. Yeah.
Have you built that thing?
No, not yet.
It is an amazing like it is basically an action featured super scope made out of cardboard.
Cool.
Like it actually like cocks back and clicks and it has a trigger and pops forward. Like there's multiple rubber bands doing all this work in there. It's got this first person shooter sort of tethered to it where you shoot aliens and you can see down the barrel of your gun. It is a really charming take on VR. Like I don't really only mess with the headset so far.
Think they'll ever make a cardboard bow for Zelda VR?
I think so. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, for sure. It's confirmed already. They're already working on it.
Man, that would be that actually be great because if it had like an elastic thing, you could actually just shoot Joy-Con with it.
I know.
It.
Yep.
Yeah.
Shoot Joy-Cons at people.
Are you guys going to check out Zelda in VR?
Hell yeah.
My plan is actually to build a head strap for it and just see if I can do it.
See,
that
I'm not
way.
An engineer, so I'll just plant my face against a wall.
Oh, that's a good idea. You could also you could duct tape.
Wasn't there a picture of you like lying on the ground with it resting on your face?
That's my version one experiment.
Mm-hmm.
I can move on to the wall and then the ceiling.
It's hard to look around when you do that. So just get like a movable wall.
Go to the carnival, get on the Gravitron, stick that baby right there.
That's the perfect way to do it.
Just go in a wind tunnel.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't want to spend a ton of time on this because I know we have a lot of really great questions. I put out a call in the NBC forums to see if anybody had questions. We got a lot of good ones, so I want to address some of those. But has anybody been playing anything cool, Seth? I know you had a cool story, man, that I want to hear you tell.
I played Zelda 2 and I beat it for the first time in my life.
How?
And it's like, how? Save states?
Oh, okay.
This was on the NES app, I assume?
This was the online app. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to do this now. It's like one of the first Nintendo NES games that I ever played. Like, it gave me a blister from playing it. Like, we were, you know, that was back when you'd rent a game, you'd have it for 2 days, and you'd be like, I hope I can beat this.
Yeah.
It's impossible. You can't beat Zelda 2 in 2 days. Nobody can. Well, that's not true. Somebody can.
Somebody.
Not me. And I use save states. Not me. I beat it, and I let out, like, a guttural scream. Like, yes! When I finally beat that game. And I wouldn't have done it if it had not been for save states, because it's very hard, and it's kind of frustrating, because it's very old school. When you die, you go all the way back to the beginning. You have to walk all through the whole map, and all the bad guys throw rocks at you.
And Ganon laughs at you. It's very
Ganon
demeaning.
Returns. Yeah,
I think I actually really love that game. I always have. It's very different than the other Zelda games.
Oh yeah.
Not only because it's like a side scrolling. It's almost sort of got this like Sekiro element to it where you're parrying and blocking and all this other crazy stuff, but also like it is sort of distinctly obtuse in a lot of ways. Misdirection in that game. There's a lot of very sprawling temples that have dead ends, and the entire sort of like Death Mountain area in that game
is
a hell labyrinth. And there's one specific way through it, which is I think basically just sticking to all the right.
Yep.
Yeah, and so spoilers. If you don't, yeah, I know. Sorry,
it's no. That's a tip.
It's a good tip. That's a cheat code. Check out the IGN wikis. if you go left or down or anything like that, you just die a thousand times, and like these just awful monsters and lizard men kill you.
Yeah,
and
this was a game made for Nintendo Hotlines.
Yeah,
yes.
Oh my god, yeah.
That's like putting a Scantron test where every answer is B. Where you're like, going right, surely it can't be right again. You go down, you die, you're like, I guess it was, you go right, and you're like, can't be right again, can it, at a certain point?
It's also like everyone in this game, every human NPC feels cursed, and they all can only speak to you in the amount of text that can fit in one box. So they're always just like, shoe is good.
Yeah.
And someone is like, bat is poison for health. And you're like, I don't know what you're talking about.
I am
palace to the corner of rock.
Yeah. That's where I am error came from. Because it's just, you meet this man in the forest who's just like, I am error. And you're like, are you okay? Like, did you eat your dog? Like, what do you do here? What's going on? It's a really weird, it's almost scary too.
It is.
It scared the hell out of me as a kid.
Yeah.
There's like, it's a very creepy game. It's the first time you fight Shadow Link, I believe.
It has like RPG elements.
Yeah.
You have to level up. and it is ruthless.
Yeah, I suggest anybody playing this game for the first time, you have to grind a lot at the beginning.
Yep.
And there's like specific ways to do that, but like get
none of them are fun.
Exactly. Grind a lot and then up all your health. Do everything you can. Up your attack. All that fun stuff. And mm-hmm. and then go beat some dungeons and temples. And, mm-hmm. Get a wiki. Yeah. Use save states.
Get whatever
you do, get through it.
Yeah, use the save states. There's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm.
You cheated yourself.
No, I did not. I am rewarded by beating it.
Sad that you can't tell the difference.
Does anybody else play anything notable that they want to shout out? I was really into Katana Zero, but...
oh, yeah, me too.
That game's real fun.
Yep, go check that out if you haven't.
I've been replaying Shadows of Valentia on the 3DS Fire Emblem game.
Oh, cool.
Just because I'm preparing for the next Fire Emblem game, finally come back to consoles.
Yeah.
And I actually heard from Famitsu that they're bringing back some certain features like the Millis Time Wheel that lets you rewind time when you made a mistake instead of having to just restart the entire chapter, which we all love saying, like, oh, I'm going to reset as soon as someone dies, but that can sometimes take a lot of time.
Yeah.
So having that little oopsie mistake just like once or twice, it's not
I like
bad.
That.
You don't have to adhere to it if you don't want to.
That's what scared me about, I've never really gotten into that series because I'm always like, oh, it's just too anxiety-inducing.
Mm-hmm.
I spent like a week in Radiant Dawn on one chapter because I kept dying at the end. I'm just like, one person died, like, nope, restart, doing it again.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think that I like a lot how brutal Fire Emblem is because that permadeath really makes you care about your characters and makes you not want to just rush into battle. I think that's
right.
Really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
But just that little bit of forgiveness is
yeah, I don't
just
think having
so
like
helpful.
Two or three little tries is not going to diminish the intensity of I have to not
yeah.
get people killed.
Exactly. one thing I'll really quick mention because the embargo for this actually just went up before this airs. I played Box Boy and Box Girl.
Mm-hmm.
I've been playing that on my Switch and I'm liking it, but I'm maybe not overly in love
with
it.
I'm liking it.
Yeah, I think it's a really fun game. Granted, I didn't really play the other Box Boy games, but...
So you're not caught up on the...
On the plot?
The story?
No. Box Boy cinematic universe?
All I know is that Pear was always talking about how it's always black and white, and this game literally starts with everything green and blue and lovely,
yep.
and then a meteor hits, and it all turns to black, and you're like, where'd the green go?
Yeah, the Russo brothers said this was the beginning of Phase 4. No.
I like it. It just feels very easy so far. And one of the things
how's the co-op stuff?
The co-op stuff's actually really, really cool. It breaks the game entirely.
Ooh, fun.
Because you can do things, spoilers, but you can do things where if you need to get across a gap, let's say, you can have one person extend out blocks but not let go of the button and then have somebody climb across the gap and then they pull the blocks back in and then the other person extends for you and you get across and you haven't used any blocks in the way the game calculates it. So me and my girlfriend have been playing and it'll be like the best metal that you can get on a level will be like use less than 40 blocks. Can you do that? And we'll get like 19. Because we use this just exploit that it doesn't feel like the game planned for.
Yeah.
So it feels pretty simple and easy to me, but Sam and Pear were both saying that Box Boy games usually start that way and then get really, really fun and challenging and hard as you get deeper into them. So I'm not very far. I like it. It seems very well put together, and it feels pretty fully featured, which I'm happy about, but I need to play more of it before I'm overly sold. But it's my kind of game, so I'm going to play more of it. let's take some questions.
All right.
Part of question block. All right. The first one, I'm really glad this was asked. Jack Windsor asked, if Brian is with you, can he do his Pear impression again?
Hello.
So Pear told me that he was watching the episode where you did the hello, or he's listening to it in his car, and he thought he put on the wrong episode because he thought it was himself, which is maybe the best compliment you could get on that. Another question. Lan from Montreal says, hello, NBC. Let's say you were given the opportunity to revive a Nintendo franchise. What would it be? But there's a twist. To revive this franchise, you have to sacrifice and kill another franchise.
What is wrong with these ultimatum questions
yeah.
we keep getting about these wizards and death?
That said, what franchise would you bury to bring back another? And he says, been a follower of NBC since the very first day it existed. Keep up the awesome work. Thank you very much.
I'm trying to think about some like long dormant Nintendo. Oh, okay. I actually have a good one. I would kill Fire Emblem because I don't care about it to bring
Whoa.
Back Punch Out.
Yeah.
Ooh,
I'm with Brian.
I couldn't live with that. Sorry, no.
That's all right.
Yeah,
I've already made the call. The wizard's already here. He's done the damage.
Done his damage.
Yeah.
I'd kill. I'd bring back. Does Banjo Kazooie count as a Nintendo?
Nope.
Then I'm out. I don't have anything.
What about?
I'd kill them all.
What? That was it. That's all you had?
Yeah,
Banjo-Kazooie.
That was in my pocket. That was the only one I prepped.
Oh, well, how about, I don't know, Cuckoo Land?
Bring back Balloon Fight.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I know it's not only just Nintendo, but I remember having good memories of playing Gauntlet Legends on GameCube. I want another Gauntlet game.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, here's mine. I'd kill modern Yoshi brand games to bring back Yoshi's Island Yoshi games.
I could live with that.
I would kill the super casual Yoshi game to bring back the hardcore platformer that was Super Mario World 2.
Right.
Because those early games, I think, were way more... I really like the Yoshi games. I reviewed Crafted World, right? But, man, I really do miss the challenging platforming of those early ones.
Yeah, I agree.
Or that early one, I guess I should say. All right, another question. This is a longer one. Alex asks, thank you for all your hard work you put in week after week to produce such a great, informative, and fun show. For some background, I am an active-duty submarine officer in the U.S. Navy, having been on many underways for weeks... at a time and a 6-month deployment. One of the things that my watch team loved to do after standing an 8-hour watch was take a little time to relax and play some Nintendo games together, Mario Kart 8 and Super Smash Bros. Being the most popular on my boat.
What about Steel Diver?
Good point. With the announcement of Google Stadia, Ubisoft CEO Yves Guillemot predicting that the next console generation will be the last, and even Nintendo streaming Resident Evil 7 on Switch in Japan, I'm concerned with that the potential for a streaming-only future might mean for my fellow submariners and armed forces service members stationed overseas in combat zones and underdeveloped countries. I don't see internet service providers chomping at the bit to provide a great wireless connection underwater anytime soon. Do you think Nintendo will go to streaming-only route anytime soon with future consoles, or will they continue to provide local, downloadable options far into the future for those on the go? Thanks, and keep up the great work. This is a really good question.
It is.
Yeah. Ooh. No, I don't think we're never going to have an all-streaming future. There's always going to be a way to download it and take it with you.
But at least not for Nintendo.
Especially not for Nintendo.
I mean, that's what I was going to ask, because that's the question specifically, too, is with Nintendo. I think Nintendo is probably going to be the most resistant or the longest holdout.
They're like, here's our new system, and you can play games on cartridges again. Yeah. Remember those? They're awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And they taste terrible.
I started this generation thinking that Nintendo had no interest in VR. I was like, there's no reason for them to touch this. That won't happen this generation at all. And here we are. So you never say never, right? But I do agree with you guys that I think it'll be a very, very long time. And hopefully by that time, submarines have internet.
Yes.
So you think that submarines will have internet before Nintendo goes to streaming only?
Yeah.
So the problem solves itself.
Yeah, right. I think that the submarine without internet is symbolic in this scenario of the world at large that is not connected in the same way that some of the more frivolously connected areas are in the universe, where you can connect anywhere. People come to San Francisco and they're just like, oh, the future of tech, a tech hub. And it's like, well, this is not like how it is everywhere, you know?
Right.
And so I think that we as a species need to look at internet as the same way we look at power and water, and make that something that everybody has access to, for better or worse, because there's a lot of bad internet out there. And that's something we should fix globally. And I think with that, all of the other things will come next. I don't think we won't get into a situation where it's like an all streaming future is here, but you can't all stream everywhere, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that, I think he needs to, twist some arms up top and get some internet.
Rise up the ranks.
Yeah.
The admiral who was known for bringing internet to the America's submarine.
Internet of the sea.
I'm not sure if that's an allocation problem, guys.
There's one problem I'm thinking of, watching one of those old, submarine war movies, okay, everyone needs to be quiet.
Yep.
Who's downloading Mario Kart 8 right now? Could you please turn off the
internet? That's just showing up on radar. That's not how radar works. Anyway, moving on. That was a great question, so thank you very much for that, Alex. Jordan Van Horn asks, if you had to pick one indie character to make it onto the Smash Ultimate playable roster, who would it be?
We have a good list of those.
Oh, yeah?
That I wrote. And I still stand by. Shovel Knight is probably my number one pick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's already an assist trophy, so that sucks, because he won't be a real man.
Never say never.
That's like Meat Boy to show up.
That would be a cool one.
Yeah.
I guess he doesn't have many attacks.
He'd just be real fast. Nobody would like him.
Sans Undertale.
Would he be tiny?
Or
would
he be even better? Yeah, he'd be extremely little, and he would just stick and slide down everybody and then just explode.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And disgusting. I love it.
Yeah.
That's a really good one.
Brian, you got one?
Recently, I'd probably say, I say this every time, but Travis Touchdown from No More Heroes. I don't know if we can call that indie or not. Kind of.
It's indie enough.
Yeah. Actually, we had Suda51 on Up at Noon, which we brought back this week. And yeah, I asked him who he would get rid of in Smash Brothers to make room for Travis Touchdown. Because I think most people just ask him, do you want Travis Touchdown in Smash? And he's like, of course. And I was like, okay, what if you had to get rid of somebody? And he was like, Luigi.
Good choice. Great.
All good answers. And finally, since we're publishing this on Thursday, and another big thing is coming out on Thursday, which is Avengers Endgame. No spoilers, but Ronnie Anthony asks, which Nintendo character would best fit in with the Avengers?
Oh, Samus. Easy. Captain Falcon.
Whoa, that was, both of you just had gut reactions on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Samus and Captain Falcon?
Samus is the most badass character in all of Nintendo-dum.
Hmm. And Captain Falcon?
Captain Falcon is Captain Falcon.
Falcon Punch!
I still maintain that Captain Falcon doesn't make any sense. He's a race car driver. Why can he fight like that?
He's also a bounty hunter who just happens to race for fun.
Yeah, that's true.
And he has a flaming fist. An eagle.
Probably. I'm really bad at this game. I was gonna say, does Bayonetta count as a Nintendo character?
No.
Okay. Then I just don't know what a Nintendo
Banjo
character
Kazooie.
Is. You guys really, really shouldn't let me.
Oh, Master Chief.
King K. Rool.
Kratos. With a K.
You guys are the worst, and I'm ending the show because of that.
Aww.
Thank you very much, everybody, for calling in. Emailing in, writing in, whatever you did to get your questions to us. We appreciate them very much. If you want to watch NBC, you can do it wherever you're doing it right now. We have it on IGN.com, the NBC YouTube channel. You can join our podcast forums on Facebook if you just look up NBC Podcast Forum or Nintendo Voice Chat Podcast Forum. You can also find us on any service where you can listen to podcasts Thursdays at 3 p.m., I believe, Pacific time.
Pacific time.
And remember that NBC is the only place where you can
get the thing with a K.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.